Now you can get your favourite Absolute Radio stations, plus five new ones, without any ad breaks. There's My Show, The Dave Berry Breakfast Show, no ad breaks. Frank Skinner on Saturday, no ad breaks. Jason Manford on Sunday, guess what? No ad breaks. And all those great shows with your choice of music from our nine-decade stations, or country, or classic rock. It's all the Absolute Radio, but with none of the ad breaks. Get a one-month free trial now at absoluteradio.co.uk.
Welcome back. Coming up on this week's show, news about FA Cup games coming to ESPN, Italian soccer sells out to a soft drinks maker, MLS broadcasters squabble over TV costs, NWSL announces the CBS TV plans, the Premier League wobbles on the opening day of the restart, plus we have letters from you listeners in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, alongside my co-host, Nick Webster. Nick, it's exciting actually to have you on the show again this week for many different reasons. It's a Father's Day weekend special here, but really I'm excited because, I mean, obviously football's back and you've got the Premier League back and La Liga back and the Bundesliga's going. But what I'd like to kind of focus on today especially is your background and experience as a producer. So a lot of the people that know you from Fox Soccer Days and Fox Soccer Channel will know you in front of the camera in terms of whether it was Fox Football Phone-In or a lot of the shows over the weekends and the match days. But for a second or two, tell us a little bit about kind of your experience as on the production side of behind the scenes working on soccer.
Well, number one, thank you for having me back, Chris. I thought there would have been a stuffed mailbag saying, get rid of that bald English wanker. it was funny. I was putting together resumes and highlight packages and, best ofs. And I wandered onto the big soccer boards to get a refresher of how me and my colleagues used to be received by our adoring public. And made for some fascinating reading. I've got to say, I was in stitches over some of the comments. People have some pretty fierce wit out there. But no, great to be back, Chris. And yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic experience working at Fox. And I was really given free rein, which then allowed me to cover World Cups and European Championships, etc. And it wasn't until I would say 2011, when Fox started paying attention to the ratings we were getting, that big Fox Sports decided to stick their noses into what we were doing. And for me personally, that was the kind of day it ended for me, because they wanted to, and the suits wanted to Americanize soccer. And I think we saw that a lot in the coverage, where it became more about, less about the football and more about the voices. I mean, you're having Piers Morgan on and Alexi, and it was more, let's have a look at, Victoria Beckham. These were the stories that they wanted us to pursue. And that wasn't my forte. And that's when producing became very, very difficult. But overall, when we were left to our own devices, I thought, considering the resources we had available to us, we did an incredible job. And my one regret is that, in 2011, 2012, when the resources did start coming our way, we didn't get to use them in the best way to, and I don't want to say educate the American soccer fan, because they don't really need educating, but to give them a product that was more authentic, mm-hmm. and not Americanized.
Yeah, Nick, that's something that we can probably spend a whole show on, because I know kind of the old Fox Soccer and kind of the current Fox Soccer and the differences in terms of the philosophies, the spending, the shoestring budget back in the day versus kind of the budgets these days, and just the types of coverage, and you know, we could probably spend actually more than a show on that. But we're going to go back to this week or this past week in terms of the football that's been on television. And putting your production hat on, what were your thoughts about the first day? And we're recording this on Thursday. What was your thoughts about the first day of the Premier League coming back on NBC Sports?
Well, it was interesting because I know NBC definitely had some production issues in the first game. There were some audio issues. And then for some reason, we got a still shot of the London Eye for about 2 minutes. I don't know if everybody got that, but I certainly got that. And, you know, it was funny, as I'm sitting there watching it, I'm thinking to myself, oh, I know what's going on in the control room right now. You know, there's a lot of raised voices, and the technical director was probably busy punching buttons going, oh my God, where is the feed gone? Where is the feed? That first game was a little challenging. I don't think we had the crowd noise in the first half either. And I know from the commentators in the second game, Arlo and
Graham Lasseau.
Yeah, Graham Lasseau was saying that they didn't get the audio feed of the crowd noise in the first half. And I remember Lasseau saying it felt like they were in a library, you know, talking to each other. But, you know, from a production point of view, you know, NBC have done a remarkable job. They very rarely get things wrong. Very smooth, slick operation. In all honesty, I wasn't terribly distracted by the lack of crowd in the Man City game because of the ambient noise. Mm-hmm. I think it added to it, and the fact that City was so good as well, really kept your mind focused fully on the football.
Right.
The one downside, you know, is when you step away. So I went to the kitchen to make a cup of tea, and usually, you know, you can hear the crowd building when something's about to happen, and you can rush back in and catch something. But you didn't get it in this kind of format, which is, yeah, it's not surprising. But, you know, overall, you know, I give them a solid 8 out of 10 for their production.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult though too, because a lot of this probably were faults of the world feed, the feed that NBC Sports is getting from the Premier League, and not so much NBC Sports, because the audio difficulties, it started actually before the match even started. You went into the stadium, into Villa Park, you had the silence, first of all. I thought there would have been kind of the crowd noise. You had a drum going, which I'm not sure what that was all about. Then you had the PA system, which was really loud. You had the coin toss, which you were supposed to hear. You were supposed to hear that in every game. You couldn't really hear it. I think Rebecca Lowe basically apologized. And then you had the match itself kicked off. And then and there was crowd noise, but it was all over the place, because you had the mic from the effects mic around the pitch. So you'd hear the ball getting kicked. You'd hear the PA. You'd hear the commentators, of course, and then you'd hear some crowd noise, but the crowd noise was really, really poor. In the second half, it was much better. Actually, at halftime, I think Rebecca Lowe apologized on air. Second half was much, much better. You had some like Villa chants in there, and the volume was turned up, so you could actually hear it more. But then there was issues with the audio and video not syncing up. So you'd see the kick of a ball, and a split second later, you'd hear the sound. So it was a complete and utter mess. I mean, in some ways, I feel sorry for the Sheffield United, which we'll get into a little bit in terms of the fans and the players and the club. But it was not a high profile match. I mean, of course, the second match, the Man City Arsenal one, most people were tuning in for that one, and a lot of those issues were resolved for that. But I don't know, Nick. I'm thinking for this weekend, and I'm sure NBC is going through this right now. I mean, I'm thinking that it might be better off going with the natural sound and just screw the EA Sports artificial crowd noise, because To me, it's nowhere in the air as good as the Bundesliga. And La Liga is using something similar, the technology, but there is a lot quieter. But to me, in that Man City-Arsenal match, yeah, Man City, we were on fire. But the noise was distracting. It was just kind of a constant buzz, and it didn't really match up with what was happening on the pitch as far as those exciting moments, those near misses, those oohs and ahs. I did not like it at all.
Yeah, it's interesting that the oohs and ahs really do make the sport for me, because, you know, football is about the close shaves, you know, and the slow, steady build up to that orgasmic, the ball hitting the back of the net.
Yep.
But you know, I think it's like anything else, Chris. This is the new normal, which is completely abnormal, and it's going to take time to get used to it. And I think we're going to have, you know, a good 6 to 8 weeks of getting used to this. It's a brand new frontier from a production point of view, and I'm sure there's talks going on in the, you know, the highest echelons of ESPN and of NBC of how to navigate this this new environment. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be pros, people going, yeah, we love it, and cons, no, we hate it. And ultimately, it's going to come down to the executive producer who gets to make the decision. I mean, listen, when I was at Fox, and you know, Dermot McQuarrie was my executive producer, and Eric Shanks was the big lord of all of Fox Sports. Many times I did not agree with their decisions. As a football person, as a football fan, as a football producer, and as someone who felt like I had my pulse to what the people wanted. You know, when you're stuck in your ivory towers, as Dermot and Shanks were, mm-hmm. you know, that they're not getting the pulse of the nation. I certainly was, and I would, you know, bring suggestions to them, and they would just be, you know, they would be thrown out. Why? Because they got to make the big decisions. So, as much as, you know, you may hate it, the EVP of NBC may go, you know what, I love this Nat sound, and we're keeping it.
Mm-hmm. What I did like was the attempt. The attempt was to try to mix more of hearing the players on the pitch and the coaches, you know, the managers on the sidelines, and the fans. So, which was a little bit different, because with the Bundesliga, with the artificial sound, it's pretty much all crowd noise, and you hear the singing, the songs, and all that. And with this, it was a little bit of a mixture of both. You did hear the players still, and then you heard the fans, and maybe that was part of the issue too, is where you're having both of those. Sounds coming, audio coming in, and you have to try to mix it in live, real time. That caused it to be so disappointing. And that's the thing. I think probably the biggest thing about this too, Nick, is that with the Premier League, prior to this, you look at back at, like, say, the last 5-10 years, they've been one of the leaders in production quality. I mean, you compare that to Serie A, or compare that to other leagues, and almost always the Premier League is at the top of its game. But for this, though, I would say the Bundesliga, you mean, is completely far ahead of this in terms of not just the crowd noise, but how smoothly the Bundesliga started their season off. And yeah, and I'm sure if I go back and think about it, there were some mistakes here and there too, but a lot more polished. And for me, on the opening day of the season, or the opening day of the restart, it's not a good look. And especially too with NBC Sports looking at this, not having any live sports for the last 3 months. They're banking on this. They're saying, okay, this is our chance to go ahead and take soccer matches and have them on mainstream television, and not many sports being watched, not many sports being played at all. Here's a chance to actually bump up the TV ratings. And I'm sure within the corridors of NBC Sports, I'm sure they were furious yesterday. But overall, I was really disappointed with the actual production quality.
Well, you bring up a really good point about the Bundesliga and the sound mixing. And I want you to think about this for just a second. The sound mixers at NBC, I guarantee you, are not football people. They're sound mixing people. Mm-hmm. And so to get that rhythm down is going to take some time. I would venture to say that the sound people in Germany are probably Bundesliga fans and have supported the club since they were 4 or 5 years old. I don't know the sound mixers at the NBC studio, but I'm pretty sure they weren't raised with football. And so the game, as you know, has its own delightful rhythm that is one of the reasons why it's such a special game. Football definitely has its own rhythms. And I know this may sound egotistical, but only those that have been brought up and thoroughly understand the game really get the rhythms. If you had a sound guy, a mixing guy who was steeped in the art of football, I'm pretty sure that they could do a masterful job of creating that audio atmosphere that you as a person at home would go, oh, it feels like the crowd's there.
Yeah. And that's the thing, though, too, is that at NBC Sports, they have to be wondering, like, maybe we'll just take one of our future Nick Webster interns, but taking somebody from internal that knows soccer that says, okay, right, your job is to go ahead and do the audio mix for this because of the crowd noise and just create the different sounds. And I'm sure that person probably could do a better job than what we've heard on this opening day of this restart. I guess we'll have to wait and see. I'm leaning towards going with the natural sound, which is not what I was envisioning before these matches were played. But Nick, speaking of the matches, what were your thoughts just on the football itself on that opening day of the restart?
Well, I wasn't expecting a goal fest from Villa and Sheffield United. You know, I thought Villa would be really happy with the point. Obviously, the goal line technology fiasco was huge. And in more ways than one, being that I had Norwood on my fantasy team, so lost 6 very valuable points there. And just a shout out to any of the listeners, I am 17,000 in the world.
Wow.
There are 7.5 million players. I'm looking to move into the top 10,000. I actually have peaked at 7,000 in the world earlier in the season. So, but yes, having the Norwood goal disallowed really stuck in the craw. but yeah, that was a fiasco. But yeah, it's kind of what I expected from both teams. You know, I think Villa are happy with the point. Sheffield United probably happy with the point as well. And then the second game was just, you know, it was like Man City had never been away. They were quite superb and just such a joy to watch. And Arsenal, you know, typical Arsenal. I mean, what is it, 6 years now since they've beaten a top 6 side away from home? And when you've got a joker like David Luiz in your back four, you're always going to give up chances. You know, Arsenal have got a long, long way to go. I mean, it really is quite remarkable how much they have fallen off the echelon of elite teams in the Premier League.
For me, Nick, it was it felt like preseason a little bit, watching those games on Wednesday, the Aston Villa Sheffield United game, like two teams just battling it out. But the the Man City Arsenal game, it seemed like Man City even kind of almost like warming up to getting ready for, you know, FA Community Shield or something like that. Arsenal still trying to figure out what they're trying to do there. But the other thing about it too is that lots of delays in the games. You had the water breaks, so. And then that crowd noise, which is kind of a constant buzz throughout the game, the 90 minutes, it feels fake because even during lulls or water breaks or things like that, I think the crowd noise is still at that same level, kind of buzzing and hearing that noise. But yes, my hopes are that Friday and onwards will be much better in terms of the football on display. And in this past couple of weeks too, this past week I've watched a ton of La Liga matches. And for whatever reason, just it seems to be in terms of the technical skill and how competitive those teams are, I've been a lot more impressed by La Liga. Of course, this is only 2 Premier League matches in, so you can't really compare it too much. But I've been really impressed by La Liga. I mean, with the Bundesliga, there were so many one-sided matches, so many, 6-0s, 5-0s, 5-1s, and just really one-sided games. La Liga, almost every single game I've seen has been either a draw or very close, like kind of a late winner. And the match fitness seems to be up much higher. And again, too, I don't know if that's what they've been doing differently than, say, the Premier League. But yeah, thumbs up for La Liga from me from this past week.
Well, La Liga's always been a more technical league than either the Bundesliga or the Premier League. And listen, I think the draw of the Premier League has always been, you know, full stadiums, and the fact that teams go, you know, 100 miles an hour at each other, and they're driven on by the fans. And, you know, we're not going to see that over the next 6 weeks. I think we're going to see more of a technical game. And it's going to be interesting to see how the English players adapt to that, because, you know, they're the ones that love the blood and thunder of the English game. That's what they've been brought up upon, and it's always been the foreign players that have generally provided the, shall we say, the cherry on top of the cake, you know, right, with their class and their high level of skill.
Yep.
So. Are you going to see a big change? I think it's going to take a couple of weeks, Chris, for them to get up to that match speed that we're used to seeing in the Premier League. And so I guess, you know, you're going to have me on the show in about 4 weeks' time so we can compare and contrast.
Yeah, definitely. And with the Bundesliga too, I mean, coming close to the end of the season, of course, Bayern Munich wrapping up the title. I think they're, what, plus 64 in goal difference and just like light years ahead of any other teams. With everything going on Wednesday, that got kind of lost in the mix. And I think for most people, unless you're a Bundesliga diehard, you're switching allegiances and watching whether it's the Premier League, La Liga, or getting ready for Serie A, which kicks off this weekend. And speaking of Serie A, I'm not sure if you caught this, Nick, because Wednesday was a very, very busy day, but did you catch any of the Coppa Italia final on ESPN?
I didn't catch any of the game, but obviously read all the match reports. But, you know, you bring up a good, you know, a little interesting point about people's interests. And, you know, you look at the Bundesliga. Listen, Bayern Munich are a fantastic team. I love watching them play, but, you know, no one else has won in Germany for 8 years. Okay, so a bit boring. You've got the same situation in Italy with Juventus. Okay, in Spain, it's, you know, it's either been Real or Barcelona. I think Atletico got one title in like 2013 or something like that. But in the Premier League, there actually have been four different winners in the last 8 years. You know, Chelsea, United, City,
Leicester.
and Leicester. Yeah, well, five, in fact. So. You know, it's that competition that I think, you know, even though Liverpool have run away with it this year, it is that competition that is the thing that draws us in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. It's that rather than one-sided matches, it's those two-sided matches where, you mean, going into a game and coming out of it, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. But going back to that Coppa Italia final for a second, though.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
It's all right, You missed it, but boy, did you miss something on this one. So if I had to rank or rate the best virtual experience, which is a strange thing to be talking about, who would have thought 6 months ago we'd be talking about this? But the Bundesliga, in terms of that match TV-watching experience, I'd put number one. Even though it's early days, I'd put La Liga as number two, Premier League as number three, but hoping that they can fix things. And then number four is Coppa Italia, which is cup competition, Italian cup competition that's run by Serie A. And this one, oh my gosh, Nick, this was like, I just hope that executives, whether they're sponsors of major brands or of big like Fox Sports or ESPN, didn't see this, because what happened in the game, so Coppa Italia has a brand new sponsor. So it's now the Coca-Cola Coppa Italia. And what they did was they had the whole stadium filled with virtual fans, just like La Liga, which is fine. But they had them jumping up and down. So you're trying to watch the match, and all you see are these little characters jumping up and down in unison. So that's completely distracting. You're trying to watch the match. That's the first thing. The second thing is that they were color-coded. So you, on the main camera, you'd have all the fans in red. Well, this was Napoli, you mean blue, against Juventus in black and white. Where's the red coming from? Well, the red is that it's Coca-Cola. And there was a massive virtual Coca-Cola banner right on the main camera. You'd see it the whole time. And then you had the fans jumping up and down wearing the red. And it's basically a commercial or an infomercial in the middle of the game. The match itself, too, very much like the Premier League 2, felt like a preseason match. Even the semi-finals of the Coppa Italia have been very, lackluster. A lot of missed chances, a lot of, players just warming up. The players are not 100% match fit yet or match ready. And it showed. So the match itself wasn't that exciting. Napoli winning it in penalty kicks was great. But this is concerning to me. I just hope that we don't see more of this. I hope that others don't adopt this type of technology and say, hey, let's just fill the stadium of virtual people and virtual advertisements.
Well, you know, the Italians love doing things their own way. They are very, very special. But yes, I was very happy to see that Napoli triumphed on penalties. I mean, too often Juventus just wins everything, and always nice to get a different name on the trophy. But I think we're going to be seeing lots of different experiments, to be honest with you, Chris. Regarding, you know, how do you fill a virtual stadium? And I think there's going to be some serious misses, and that there will be a hit, and they'll figure out, you know, these TV companies, they got a lot of money, they got a lot of smart people, they will figure it out, and they'll come up with a solution that I think 95% of us will be happy with.
I just had a laugh for a second too. The fourth thing that was funny about this too, scary in a way, that I forgot to mention is that, so you had all these virtual fans jumping up and down, but there was no crowd noise. So you've got like a stadium that's filled with like, what, 50,000 virtual fans, and all you're hearing is the players and the coach or the manager. There's no crowd noise. So it's just a strange situation to be watching that match. And fair play to Mark Donaldson and Matteo Bonetti. I think they made a couple of jokes during the commentary about it. But I don't know. To me, it cheapens the game. It cheapens the cup. And I'm wondering, too, if Serie A, starting this weekend, if they're going to do the same thing. Hopefully, they'll learn the lessons. And like you said, too, this is all work in progress. This is all brand new. And hopefully, they'll listen to the viewers and the soccer fans and make the right decisions.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, it's so important that as a product, we want it to be somewhat unified. But then again, every country is going to have their own quirks, and they're going to start beg, borrow, and stealing from each other.
Yeah.
I really think that within the next 2 weeks, we're going to see a model that incorporates bits and pieces from all around the different European leagues, and broadcasters are going to go, yeah, we love this. And you'll start seeing some standardization.
So let's move on to TV streaming news. And first up is Major League Soccer broadcasters are reportedly squabbling over the production costs for the MLS Is Back tournament. Hence the reason why no TV schedule has been released yet. The draw was 1 week ago. The tournament is scheduled to begin in less than 3 weeks. So ESPN is producing the entire tournament, which will be played at the company's Wide World of Sports complex. It will be their cameras, producers and directors putting out the feed that will be available for broadcast by other networks, both inside and outside of the US. The Athletic is reporting that there's been a big disagreement between Fox and ESPN. ESPN typically spends around $100,000 to produce an MLS regular season match. The network plans to add some bells and whistles in Orlando, which, combined with the cost of housing its crews in Florida for an extended period, will raise its average production cost to around $125,000 per match. Fox usually spends significantly less on its broadcast, with sources placing their average around $75,000 for regular season matches shown on FS1. And hence the reason why Fox is squabbling over how much money they want to pay ESPN for the privilege of broadcasting the game. And for ESPN and the tournament, most of the games, or a significant chunk of those games, of those 54 games, will be on ESPN or ESPN2, but many of them also will be on Fox and Univision, Tudo N. Nick, what's your take on this? What's your experience in terms of producing a match? And can you see the executives of Fox kind of fighting for this one and perhaps reaching a compromise, perhaps?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, ESPN is saying that it costs that much money. I'm not sure it's going to cost, you know, 120, 140 grand a match at the Wide World Complex of Sports, namely because once they get the cameras set in there, you know, there's going to be a one-time installation fee, but then all the matches are going to be played there. So I would imagine that the production costs will come down massively overall.
Right.
It doesn't surprise me that, you know, Fox isn't interested in that kind of money, and that their productions are certainly a lot cheaper than ESPN's. But it does seem a strange one when, you know, you're going to have something close to, what is it, 50, 60 matches at the,
yep,
the
54.
World West End. 54?
Yeah.
That the two companies who, you know, are bedfellows are not coming together to say, okay, look, this is the cost. Depending on how many games we're going to be broadcasting, you know, there's a prorated amount involved for Fox. So what I think is that, you know, Fox is looking at the tea leaves and saying to themselves, we don't think we're going to get a lot of viewers for this. We'd rather not spend a lot of money and dump it all on ESPN. And ESPN certainly doesn't want them to be holding the bag because, you know, 54 matches times, you know, a hundred and something thousand dollars. And that sounds like
6.7 million.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's scary.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of money. And I mean, you know, advertisers are not going to be running to jump on board to, you know, be part of and promote games that are going to have a feel of, like I said to you last week, you know, perhaps being played in a park, because, you know, the stadiums at the complex, mm-hmm. they're not the biggest. And I mean, the one thing that the European leagues have about them, yes, they're playing in front of no fans, but the stadiums still have gravitas and it still looks like it could be an important match, as opposed to, you know, just some signage around a field with some, you know, portable bleachers. So I can see why Fox are kind of moving in the other direction.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, too, about this Wide World of Sports park, which is a good word for it. It is a very kind of a wide, expansive number of fields, in 20 to 25 fields. It is more of a bleacher setup. So a lot of the pressure really is on ESPN here too, because ESPN not only is taking the risk of having their talent and, well, actually their crews filming and producing this on site. Some of it might be done remotely, but they're going to have people on site. But I mean, the 6.7 million approximately cost of actually setting this up and running this, and with Fox saying, okay, hey, we're not willing to pay X amount of dollars. We want to, you mean, we want far less than that. Because on top of that, too, Fox still has to pay their talent. You mean, they're sitting around, you mean, the Stu Holdens, the Alexi Lalases, the John Strongs, etc. So I wonder, too, if MLS will consider, if there's no agreement reached anytime soon, of kind of stepping in and trying to figure out some type of, I don't know, something monetarily wise to try to make this happen. Because in many ways, the future of MLS depends on this. Because if MLS goes this entire season without playing matches, yes, there's a chance of playing games in the fall. There's no guarantee of that. And with the COVID numbers increasing, especially in Florida, there's always a risk that the season may not actually happen. So a lot of the pressure is on ESPN, and then a lot of pressure is on MLS. And I think Fox, in some ways, probably knows that. They know that they have a little bit of leverage. I mean, it's not that there's a huge demand for these games. And like you said, Nick, I don't think the expectation is that I don't think there's going to be a lot of people tuning in for this. But the other thing, and we didn't get to this last week, too, is talking a little bit more about the times of these games. So the times each day, it's going to be 9 a.m. Eastern. So like what, 6 in the morning Pacific time. So even for the Pacific time, yeah, you can rule that out. I mean, no one's going to be watching those games, pretty much. Even 9 a.m. Eastern, in terms of, you mean, people, a lot of people are back at work. That's not a good time either. Conversely, later in the day, the games are at 8 Eastern and 10:30 Eastern. So the 10:30 Eastern for the East Coast crowd, a lot of people are probably going to think, okay, that's too late to watch those games. And if it says 10:30 Eastern, by the time MLS kicks the game off, usually it's like, what, about 15 minutes to half an hour later sometimes. There's no guarantee that that's actually the kickoff time. So that 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time is the sweet spot. It's kind of like that one game a day where both the East Coast, the West Coast, and the Midwest can come together to watch that game, which is probably going to be on ESPN. So there's a lot of question marks about this, and I just find it really interesting that this wasn't worked out beforehand. I mean, so it's been a week since the draw. We're still waiting for the schedule. The expectations are now that the actual schedule won't be until next week, which is only 2 weeks before the tournament starts. And lastly, it doesn't give the broadcasters or MLS or the clubs much time to get some promotions out there, get some advertising out there, get some publicity out there. It's a really tight window.
No, it really does seem like it's been thrown together. You know, if I'm being quite brutal, it just seems to me like this was an idea that was hatched in a boardroom with some people sitting around going, oh yeah, wow, let's do this, without a great deal of forethought to it. And the other thing that I would be very concerned about if I was MLS is that the NBA has the potential to be starting up around the same time with a similar style, not a similar style tournament, but a tournament of such. And that would go directly up against anything that MLS had. And I just see that the crossover audience is going to stick with the NBA,
yeah,
and not with soccer. So I think that you know, ESPN's probably going to lose a ton of money on this, but maybe they're thinking more the long game, because obviously the MLS rights, I believe, they're up for
2022
renewal.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, they could be thinking long game here. If Fox and it looks more likely that Fox are getting out of the soccer business, except for World Cups, you know, men's and women's, that, you know, ESPN is positioning itself to be the worldwide leader in soccer, because right now, you know, the ESPN Plus, which I think is an outstanding app, full of amazing content. If they see soccer as something viable, maybe they're gonna make a big play for MLS and try and turn it into something that Sky has done with the Premier League in England.
Yeah, and at the same time too, the Premier League rights for the next cycle are also up in 2022. So next year is going to be a huge year for bidding and TV rights and acquisitions of rights. So if an ESPN came along and gobbled up the Premier League rights for the 2022 season onwards, you're looking at, I mean, the majority of international club soccer would be ESPN. That would be the go-to place. And then you'd have the Champions League on CBS. You'd have, I mean, MLS on ESPN perhaps. And most of the majority of the major soccer, other than the World Cup, would be on ESPN. Now, the other thing...
It's going to be very interesting to actually see how much these rights go for, because obviously the world economy is in a massive downturn. The last set of rights that NBC paid for, it went for a record amount. I don't think the Premier League are going to get the kind of money that they're used to getting.
Right. And at the same time, too, I have to wonder whether NBC Sports will be willing to pay as much as they did last time, which ended up being about $1 billion for these rights to the Premier League. And the numbers are decent for Premier League, but I don't think they have grown to what they expected. And you also have new executives, new people within the NBC Sports organization that weren't back there in 2012 and 2013. It's a whole new set of people that may not have the same interest in the Premier League in the future. Yes, it has put NBCSN on the map, but there's plenty of other sports out there too. And at $1 billion plus, perhaps, maybe more, depending if there's a bidding war, that might be a little bit too much. We'll have to wait and see. We're still a ways off for that. But speaking of TV, also this week too, we had the NWSL that announced their TV schedule. And we're looking at June 27th through July 26th, playing the 2020 Challenge Cup in Utah. And the way they're doing it, to me, sounds more logical. What they're doing is having two matches a day. So the opening game of the season is on CBS, over-the-air CBS, as well as CBS All Access, which is their streaming platform. And then the cup final, the final game in this tournament, will also be on CBS and on CBS All Access. All the other matches are going to be on CBS All Access. So this is really a play to get people to subscribe or check out the free trial on CBS All Access and put them on the map. With the timing of the games, it's the same time every single day, so like clockwork. And the kickoff times are 12:30 Eastern time and 10 p.m. Eastern time. And to me, in terms of looking at that compared to MLS, this is probably something that's a little bit more manageable. You got a 9:30 in the morning Pacific time kickoff, a 12:30 Eastern time. You can watch the game during lunchtime, and then a 10 o'clock Eastern or a 7 p.m. Pacific time. A little bit earlier than that 10:30 MLS game too. So there's opportunities here. I'm not expecting massive viewing numbers for any of these by any means, but it is a good plan by NWSL, and maybe it'll work. We'll have to wait and see as far as how successful it will be.
Well, I think it's a trial run, actually, by CBS for when they take over the Champions League next the year after next.
Yep.
You know, obviously, those kind of time slots are Champions League time slots. I think they're using this to bed in producers who can understand the soccer format, so to speak. I mean, this is CBS's first foray into the beautiful game, and I think it's pretty smart of them actually to use the NWSL as their guinea pig. You know, you don't want to jump straight in with the high profile Champions League game and get absolutely slaughtered for your soccer coverage. You know, as you know, Chris, we're quite critical.
That's
quite critical,
right?
Viewers, and so I think they're using this to, you know, iron out bugs that will absolutely occur in their soccer productions, and they'll be able to do it without a very critical audience checking their every move. So yep. Fair play to CPS on this one.
Yeah, it's also a good sweetener to try out CBS All Access. I haven't tried it before. I know it's got Star Trek and a bunch of other programs that I'm not really interested in. But, I mean, with NWSL, I'll give it a chance and see how the streaming platform is. Last but not least, in terms of TV news, and that is that ESPN is moving more games to television. So, again, 3 months ago, we would have not expected this, but ESPN is going to have two of the FA Cup quarterfinals on the big ESPN. So the flagship network, it's going to be the Norwich against Man United and Sheffield United against Arsenal quarterfinals later in June. I think it's like June 27th and June 28th. And both those games will still be on ESPN Plus, and the other quarterfinals will be on ESPN Plus also. And as far as the schedule goes, right now the semifinals of the FA Cup and the final will be exclusively on ESPN Plus. But there's always a possibility that it might change. So I think it's a smart move. I mean, again, it's getting more people used to watching matches. There's nothing much on anyway as far as live sports. So have them watch the FA Cup. If they're interested, they can subscribe to ESPN Plus and watch the rest of the FA Cup all the way through to the final.
Yeah, smart move by ESPN. As I said, the way they're positioning themselves, I really see a big play. And wouldn't even put it past ESPN to maybe even go ESPN the soccer channel, much like, you know, Fox Soccer Channel did back in the day. You know, create a channel that's devoted purely to the beautiful game. I mean, BN Sports, you know, you hear so many different things, but perhaps they're getting out of the business of La Liga, which would then put those rights up for grabs. And I mean, should ESPN get that, it would be very much like, you know, Fox Soccer back in the day. I mean, when I first went to Fox Sports World, Chris, we had the Premier League, we had the Bundesliga, we had the Serie A, we picked up select games from La Liga. It was, you know, just the best football in the world every single day.
Yep. Yeah, and it's weird in a way, though, too, Nick, because things have changed so much. So back in the day, back then was fantastic because we'd go from a La Liga match on an early Saturday morning to a 10 a.m. Eastern time Premier League match, sometimes a Bundesliga, depending on which cycle it was in. Sometimes I think even the Argentine match with Max Bretos. And you'd go through the whole entire weekend watching probably like six or seven matches and even getting the news. And it was great. These days, though, it's so different, though. You know what I mean? In terms of somebody, it's become almost very cult-like, where someone's like a fan of, say, Major League Soccer, and that person will only watch Major League Soccer and will not watch much else, and vice versa. Someone that's a hardcore La Liga fan or a hardcore Premier League fan or a hardcore, I mean, you go down the list. Back in the day, Nick, it seemed to be a lot more equal opportunity as far as kind of here's the best matches from around the world on television, and we're picking these to show to you. I wonder how that would work in these days, if people would be more receptive to that or not.
Well, I think it's an interesting idea. I think I preferred the old days, Chris. You know, it was great. One place, right. You know, not 10 different providers.
Oh yeah. That's it's become a full-time job for me now too. It's just trying to dissect all the changes, and actually even this weekend too, with Peacock launching, showing the Premier League match, the Bournemouth Crystal Palace game. So I have to spend my afternoon like basically just watching Peacock and for the first time ever filming it and producing something this weekend to actually show people how it works, answering all those questions and almost becoming like a technical support or customer support. I enjoy doing that, but it is very complicated for somebody who just wants to watch football. And that's the thing, though, too, with something, if it's an ESPN soccer channel, that would provide it, make it simpler, make it an easy subscription fee, and they can watch, you mean, everything throughout the entire 24/7, basically. All right, moving on to TV ratings. We won't go through every number here, too, but we will have the numbers at worldsoccertalk.com on the homepage within the next 24 hours. But some of the numbers that have come through, Bayern Munich against Mönchengladbach, Borussia Mönchengladbach on Saturday was 359,000 viewers on FS1 and Unimas combined. The number for Unimas was, I think, 135,000 people there. Then we had the return of La Liga. And even though beIN Sports is not on DirecTV, it's not on Comcast, it is available pretty much everywhere else. Mallorca against Barcelona, which is a great match. I really enjoy this one. 316,000 viewers tuned into that one. And then the Real Madrid against Eibar game on the Sunday. I missed this one, unfortunately, but 251,000 viewers on beIN Sports and beIN Sports and Espanyol. So with the number of the distribution of beIN Sports being about 10 to 15 million subscribers, pretty solid numbers for beIN Sports and two of the biggest teams in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're great numbers. And it just goes to prove that, you know, the power of the sport and the demand for it is out there. Of course, you know, we're not talking in the millions, but we also got to remember that the sport has been off the airways for the last 3 months, and it's going to take time for, you know, people to rediscover it again, especially the fair weather fans. But the fair weather fans are the ones that really start driving advertising numbers.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we'll get the numbers too for Wednesday's Premier League matches, and we'll add that to the worldsoccertalk.com website. So check that out. Listener mailbag. First up is Eric Coulton. Eric says, "Hey guys, thanks for keeping up the podcasts over the lockdown. And no problem there, Eric. We enjoy doing it. Next up is Edward. He says, Bundesliga production of tactics analysis has been good. I really like their breakdown of goal probability. And I'm not sure if you saw this one, Nick, but actually last weekend it was something new. So usually at halftime during the Bundesliga matches, they have kind of a promo reel running that has a little bit of maybe a focus on one of the players. But what they've started doing is, in combination with Amazon Web Services, is having a segment that goes a deep dive into the tactical analysis. And they had goal probability stats throughout the weekend, showing how likely it was for certain players. I think Thorgan Hazard was one in terms of the chances he gets in front of goal, the types of angles he gets, and the types of basically the goal completion, what's the likelihood that he's going to score, and comparing that to other players. And I thought it's really well done. And the Bundesliga, like I said before, too, are really leading the pack in terms of production and partnerships they're doing. And I'm sure, too, that the Premier League and other leagues will look at this closely and say, hey, yeah, here's an opportunity to copy from some of the best out here. And what can we do with a similar partnership, maybe with a Microsoft or whoever it may be? And find this a great way to bring in an advertiser and provide really, really good content to the viewer and make it feel like it's, informational, which it is, and it doesn't feel like advertising.
Well, AWS is an incredible service, and the technology that Amazon currently have is really quite scary. You know, I'm sure they're listening to us right now.
right.
But in terms of that deep dive into player data and player metrics, for soccer nerds like you and I, it's like Christmas morning every day, isn't it? Getting that kind of detail. So, I'm a big fan of it. I don't know where it's going to go. I'm sure we've only just seen the tip of the iceberg in terms of how the technology is going to work, and they're probably going to drip it in over the course of the next 6 to 8 weeks, and then it will be interesting to see what happens when the season re-ups again in late August, early September. How many of these technology components are we going to see in the new season? And to be honest with you, Chris, I would not be as surprised to see the game itself, the five sub rule that will remain. I wouldn't be surprised if the 25-minute, 22-minute water break becomes part of the game as well, and they figure out a way to get advertising out of that. I think we're going to see some dramatic changes in the game and in the producing of TV soccer over the next 6 months.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure a lot of them are thinking that long-term too, thinking, okay, let's go ahead and short-term, yeah, there's a need for this. Let's go ahead and do these water breaks. But in the back of their minds and in those kind of backroom conversations, they're also thinking long-term in terms of, how does this change things? How does this help us in terms of global advertising, sponsors, other opportunities, and do it in a really authentic way, I guess, rather than the kind of the Coca-Cola, Coppa Italia, in your face, obnoxious, you're just very distracting. Next up is Disco George. Disco George says, guys, I don't think MLS cares about European soccer at all in creating the MLS's back tournament. They're looking at their domestic competition, the NBA tournament, NHL, whatever baseball decides to do, etc. That context is more important to them right now, getting back on national television before anyone else. Nick, do you agree or disagree?
I think I agree with that statement. Eyes on the screen, perhaps the most important thing for leagues right now. And they're going to do anything they can to promote their products. And look, I hate calling football a product. I really do. Mm-hmm. But in the big picture, that's what it is. It's a product that needs to be packaged and sold for the likes of these companies and these leagues to make money.
Yeah, this is a strange one. Actually, it's a good question by Disco George and some good feedback and comments. Because if you look at soccer, look at world soccer, MLS is going to be one of the last leagues to actually get back Ligue 1 is cancelled the whole season. That's done and dusted. But for all the other leagues, major leagues, MLS is going to be last. But yes, within MLS, within the executives there, and within the owners, yes, they're thinking about the actual domestic competition, against competing against the NBA, competing against the NFL and college football and these things, and being first to market, being on national television. Now, I understand that. I disagree with that, though, personally. I think it's one of those things that just because you put it on ESPN in prime time does not mean that people are actually going to tune in and watch it. It needs to be... I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it. There's a lot more of... I think you almost need that shoulder programming. You almost need to build the context. You almost need to help people along in this and not do a very basic football versus football thing that Fox did many, many years ago. Do it the way the NBC does it, which is very, to me, very intelligently, they're not talking down to you, but they are, that's at the same time, they are explaining, you mean, the history, the tradition, the culture, the different things, but doing it in a very understated way. But great feedback there and great comments from Disco George. Next up, Robert says, to say that people will watch the other country's games before Major League Soccer is hopefully not true. Do people in the UK watch German soccer, or Italians spend time watching Spanish football? If we want to continue to build strong soccer in the US, then we need to support our league. All right, Nick, this is something that I think Alexi Lalas would have a very strong opinion about this one. What do you think? Do you think that in order to continue to build soccer in the US, that we have to support our league?
Well, I mean, technically, yes. But as, you know, fans, you're going to want to watch the best. And if there's a choice between a La Liga game and a MLS game, you're probably going to watch La Liga, you know, 9 times out of 10, unless you happen to be a diehard supporter of that particular MLS game. So I think that the email just doesn't really carry a lot of weight. Sorry.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, sometimes I think, I mean, to me, we're in a globalized world, so no matter where you live, you can tune into, you know, the streaming or television and watch or listen to practically anything around the world. So if you're living in the UK and maybe you're into music or you're into movies, you mean, are we saying that you can only listen to bands out of, you know, Sheffield, you mean, or London, and you can't listen to or enjoy the best bands from around the world, you mean, if they're in the States, or even movies? I mean, most of the best movies in the world come out of the United States. To me, it's a very, I wouldn't say backwards, but it's a very primitive way of thinking. To me, it's all about watching the best. And not to say that Major League Soccer is not good. I mean, at times it can be very entertaining. It depends on which games and which teams you have performing in front of you. But to me, I mean, I think we live in a world where we experience and watch and eat and drink and do whatever we do. But it's not so much focused on that local club anymore. And it's the same thing goes in England too. I mean, yes, going back to what Robert says, yes, people in the UK watch German soccer, not as much as the Premier League. Yes, Italians watch Spanish soccer, not as much as Serie A. But if you look at US, you look at Asia, you look at, say, Malaysia or Singapore or different countries around the world, you look at India. I mean, most of those countries are not watching their local league in massive numbers. The most popular leagues in those countries are outside of those local domestic areas.
All right. Yeah.
All right. All right. Next up is JP. JP says the issue with the subdued, augmented crowd noise may be on La Liga, maybe a be-in sound issue mix. And not La Liga itself. Recall when beIN Sports had Serie A, the noise was often lower than what the same match would be on RAI. I didn't notice a difference when they used the world feed over there in the house commentary. To be fair to beIN Sports, I feel the same way about Serie A matches on TV, or Mark and Matteo for an ESPN Plus match. And last but not least, Nick, Adam Hay says, interesting interview on World Soccer Talk with Nick Webster. Very interested to hear more about what you've got going on. So perfect segue here, Nick. If you can give listeners an opportunity to find out more about how they can learn about really kind of more the mental side of the game and everything that you've got going on as far as the best way to get in touch with you.
Well, I have had a knockback in the past week. My good friend Eric Guinaldo, who I was working with at the Las Vegas Lights, was dramatically fired yesterday. So I'm still waiting to hear the full story of that parting of the waves. And I was doing some mental work with the players. And so basically what I'm doing right now, I'm a performance and leadership specialist, and I aim to get the extra 3-5% out of you through guided discovery, asking very powerful questions and getting even more powerful answers to help you become the best player you can be on the pitch and the best person you can be in life. So if you are interested in talking to me about this, you can reach me at nickjwebster@gmail.com. I have a program that is designed for individuals, for teams, and for coaches as well who are looking to expand their mental capabilities, especially dealing with the youngsters of today who really think quite differently about how their approach to the game is, certainly compared to those of us who are a little bit older in the tooth. So that's really what I'm up to. I think it's a growing industry, and it's something that I'm very excited and very passionate about. And also with the Las Vegas Lights departing, if anybody has some opportunities in the USL, hey, don't be afraid to drop me a line.
Yeah, definitely with the USL coming back soon, that's definitely going to be hopefully a big opportunity there. So, listeners, we want you to have your say. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. And you can get a new episode of the podcast every Thursday across all the podcast players. And Nick, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. So from your production expertise, your coaching and playing expertise, I've enjoyed this. Thank you for all your insight.
Once again, Chris, anytime. Pleasure to be here.
Enjoy your football.